Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks, although probably it's actually not going to be special. Probably. Maybe not in terms of quality of the episode, but in terms of quality of content. Is this the worst thing we've ever done, Matt?
This is the worst series of stories we've read in a very long time. This is the worst. As far as rankings go, we're just going to go ahead and give you all a spoiler. This is the worst. This is already going on the bottom. Spoiler alert. This is going on the bottom. But you need to know why. Especially with this upcoming Hush 2, Bob, which dropped this week. I'm going to try to make sure this episode drops this week as well. So we're going to be pushing out a ton of Gotham Knights content. Don't worry.
It's going to be the marathon of Gotham Knights content. Okay. 4 issues, minus the crossovers.
God, Bob. We read 74 issues of this.
Minus the crossovers and a couple fill-ins.
That is true. There were some War Games crossovers. And is it War Games or War Crimes?
Games is the crossover that much later, maybe also written by the writer of these issues, AJ Lieberman, is War Crimes, which I think that's where it's revealed Leslie Tompkins killed Stephanie Brown.
Oh, yes, Bob. Spoilers for War Crimes, folks. But yes, that is, you're absolutely correct, Bob. War Crimes was post War Games. Not to be confused with WCW War Games, which was one of the best paper pieces.
Once in a while, it was a war crime. This is a podcast that believes in radical accountability. And so last week, listeners, which won't be last week, it'll be like 3 hours before this episode, I lied to you. And I said we were just going to talk about the first half of the AJ Lieberman Gotham Knights run. When we actually read this, we realized there was no need in the world to go as slow and deliberately through the AJ Lieberman run of Gotham Knights as we did through the Devin Grayson and the Scott Beatty runs, which were actually interesting. So instead of going issue by issue, we're going to go arc by arc, and we are going to talk about every issue of the AJ Lieberman run from issue 50 through 74, but we're going to talk about them in arcs. We're going to skip the Mr. Freeze fill-in, and we're going to skip the War Games crossovers issues, basically issues 50 to 74 with a few gaps.
Don't worry, you're not missing anything, promise you, especially with that Mr. Freeze issue.
Yeah. Matt, have you read anything else by our guy AJ Lieberman?
I have not, Bob. And I'm glad I haven't.
You shouldn't. He also wrote a Harley Quinn run, which I don't know, maybe that's the best Harley Quinn run ever written. I've never read it. And then around the same time, although I think a little later than this series, he did a Martian Manhunter, maybe 8-issue series. That series was really bad. I read all the Martian Manhunter comics about 5-7 years ago, and I read that during it. They've all blurred together. I can't remember why the Lieberman one in particular was bad as opposed to the Steve Orlando one, which was bad, or the one where he get Martian Manhunter goes to more Conan aesthetic. I forget who wrote that one. That one was also bad. But the AJ Lieberman was the worst Martian Manhunter of the many Martian Manhunter series I read.
So, Bob, I can just picture it, okay? There's this dude, AJ Lieberman, walks into DC editorial, got this pitch for Harley Quinn. Something good. It's really great. He writes it. Oh, grand slam. People buy the issues. I never read it. I don't know, Bob. I'm just going to pretend, okay?
You're just pretending.
I'm just pretending here. Then this guy hit a grand slam. Let's give him Gotham Knights. That book's boring. And then AJ's, what am I going to do? So he starts like pulling things out of a hat. And then he starts asking editorial what he can play with and who he... And they're like, hey, what? That Killing Joke thing did really well. And Hush did pretty good, too. Why don't you just take a stab at them? And he's like, okay. So he goes and he does it, and it sucks. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And then we have him under contract. Pass him Martian Manhunter. Ain't nobody reading that book. Boom.
They didn't pass Martian Manhunter to him. They let him relaunch it. It was a new miniseries, 8 issues.
What was wrong with these people, Bob? So he wrote this and then did Martian Manhunter.
It's worth remembering, he didn't just write this. He wrote this for nearly 2 years. Actually, he did do it for 2 years, minus 1 month.
He was on this book for 2 years, and they were okay with it.
They thought it was fun.
Do you think the covers sold these books?
You and I really, really disliked the Scott Beatty run at the time. We were excited for this because as the cover of Batman Gotham Knights number 50 promises, Matt, new team, ! New direction, ! The return of Hush, !
Exactly, Bob. When you start your book like that, you know it's going to be promising. That's like driving by a motel that says, under new management. But why did they let him play with these characters? Why did they give him the toy box and to say, you could do what you want? Let's just go into it, Bob, so people understand what we're talking about here.
It starts off with Riddler getting thrown through a skylight in issue 50. That's not so bad. It's a fine way to go. It also symbolically is Lieberman killing the father. It's Lieberman saying, no, I'm not going to do Hush like Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee did Hush. I don't think Riddler's the mastermind.
I don't think Riddler's the one who knows your secret. It doesn't really matter. Of course, that does play a part later on, although we find out it's not the same secret, Bob, that we thought it was. Did that trick you?
That did trick me, Matt.
It did. It's not the Bruce Wayne secret. It's the secret that we know who killed Joker's wife. Bad cop. Come on. Bad cop. Oh, my God. This tries to tie itself into Killing Joke. The art style tries to copy it as well. You do have to a lot of the imagery, but then the story takes him back to the amusement park from the Killing Joke.
This first issue sets up it, like you're saying, throughout the first arc, it's a ripoff of Killing Joke. And then the other thing is it sets up the concern with like doppelgangers from issue 50 on. So we have Batman seeing Vesper Fairchild, or someone who looks like Vesper Fairchild, and freaking out. And Matt, did you remember who Vesper Fairchild is?
Bruce Wayne murderer, Bruce Wayne fugitive. Vesper's the one who Bruce was framed for killing.
Vesper was his sometimes girlfriend. I think she was introduced in the Doug Munch, Kelly Jones run in the mid-90s. I think she was a radio DJ, I want to say. She was in the books before that crossover as Bruce's sometimes girlfriend, but she wasn't that prominent.
If I remember correctly, Bob, David Kane is the actual murderer, the father of Cassandra Kane. And this was all under the order of President Luthor, so we wanted to make sure that we included the big Superman villain.
You just spoiled me because I had never read it, and I knew it was David Kane, but I did not know it was under the orders of President Luthor.
Sorry about that. Well, you spoiled war crimes for people.
I did. They set up like Bruce Wayne, Lex Luthor animosity in No Man's Land, and I guess Bruce Wayne murderer fugitive is meant to be the culmination or payoff of that.
This is what happens when you mess with President Luthor, who plays an interesting part in a book I just finished reading last night, Bob, called Batman Fortress.
Oh, which, I wanted to ask, is that good? That looked terrible, so I never read it.
I gave it a 3-star, Bob. It is what it is. If it's 3 stars, I can't give you a definite, it's great, it's good, it's there. It tells a pretty interesting story that I finished.
Do you think I would enjoy it?
I don't think so.
Then I'll skip it.
Yeah, just skip it. I don't think you would enjoy it. I think you'd make fun of me for liking it.
I am about to make fun of you for something else, Matt, which is to say, unlike you, I believe in what the Goodreads site puts as the captions for the stars. So for me, 3 stars means it's good. I would never recommend something unless in extraordinary circumstances I put it 2 stars. But if I put something at 3 stars, I think it was good. I liked it. I'm not on the fence about its quality.
So in my brain, Bob, I won't give a 1 star unless I'm willing to write a review on why it's that bad.
I respect that, but I don't think that anything that's a 1 star actually deserves your time. I respect what you're trying to do with that.
Yeah, movie, yeah.
But this is a 1-star comic, and it doesn't deserve you to write a review.
Maybe that's what I should just write in the review part. It doesn't deserve the end. That does seem very mean, though, if the author ever actually does see it.
They need to know the truth, Matt.
They need to show the truth.
Do you want AJ Lieberman going through life thinking he's good at writing comics?
We'll get into this later, Bob, but with Hush 2, we talk a little bit about that at the end of the podcast. I'm just going to say, keep this in mind when we talk about Lieberman, because just keep this in your, what we just talked about in your
I'll
mind.
I'll keep it in my back pocket.
Keep it in your back pocket, Bob.
Speaking of learning things about Hush, Matt, did you really like the reveal in this first arc? And so, listeners, we're talking about the first arc now that's issues 50 through 55. It's called Pushback. It's 6 parts. But did you like the reveal at some point in Pushback? I forget when, listeners. Forgive me. We find out that Hush not only has head bandages, but he has torso bandages.
Hush has been working out in the bayou. He's swole. Yeah. He's picking up tree trunks and like flipping them around. This arc starts off with him like beating up some people out that were on their canoes or whatever. And
he's beating up some Cajuns
for no reason whatsoever. And you're not really sure if it is him. But you definitely know when you see his full shot with his bandages on his head, but no outfit, no costume, just the trench coat. What? That's a horrible design. Awful.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
It is basically awful.
It makes him look like a flasher. He's like the naked flash under the trench coat. It's not a good look for your mastermind villain.
Put a shirt on. But he's just throughout the whole thing, so he never puts a shirt on for all 6-7 issues that take place over multiple nights. The man just... walks around shirtless now, because why? The world-renowned surgeon.
And he's swole. He's ripped. He's jacked.
Is he showing off, Bob? Is that what it is? He's showing off. He's just a narcissist, though.
The artist on these is Al Baranovo, or Alejandro Baranovo, and he's not reminiscent of Lee, but I think him having Hush be shirtless is a way to give, I mean, that's not how Jim Lee drew Hush, but it's a way of giving a Jim Lee feel to Hush, if that makes sense.
I do get that impression, especially when you see those full page shots of him standing all firm and strong. It looks like he's mimicking Jim Lee's style.
What else do we want to talk about this arc, Matt?
Well, Bob, there's this one scene, and I just want to tell you about this part, because when I was reading this and we were younger, I thought this was going to be the next Hush, the actual Hush 2, okay? I was really into this. So I start analyzing stuff page to page, and we get to this part where Hush, he obviously has disguised himself as a maintenance man, and he's come to do something to an MRI machine. Batman had that plate in his head, and Superman zapped the plate in his head from the Hush, and now he's going and planting something under there, and for some reason, Batman's going to have to get an MRI, and it's going to, like, set something off, and it's going to be way... No, it was a bomb, Bob. It was a bomb in the MRI machine.
You need to read a Chinese science fiction novel called Of Ants and...
I've never heard of that, Bob.
You know the Three Body Problem on Netflix? It's the same writer.
Okay.
And it's a lot shorter. It does some funny things with MRI machines and bombs.
Yeah, I just remember being younger, Bob, and being so disappointed that I wasn't having to piece together clues in this. It was just a bunch of Hush meets this guy and does this, then Hush meets this guy and does this. There wasn't a mystery.
It was discontinuous action in a weird way.
The Clayface piece does confuse you at times, but not like it should. Not because you know what's going on. No one is fooled by what's going on here. No one is confused by this with the Clayface stuff. Or the Prometheus stuff.
A weird parallel is we do have a lot of Joker, Penguin, and Riddler, and also Joker's big henchman, Ken, who you think is going to pay off into something and never does. Joker, Penguin, Riddler, and Jack Ken are hanging out in front of a fire, and Joker, Penguin, and Riddler are arguing about things like Joker's dead wife. And the three of the fearsome foursome from Batman 66 hanging out together did give me vibes of Batman 66. Also, do you remember the James Tynion arc, the one that starts off his last run, where the designer is offering a deal to Joker, Penguin, Riddler, and Catwoman?
All in front of the fire. It really does. It gives that motif. It's a little more like laid-back villainry you would see in the 60s.
You already brought up the big surprise, Matt. I guess in the spirit of this episode just ruining things for our dear listeners. So were you more surprised that when we were kids or now, I guess when we were kids, because we probably both remembered it now, but were you more surprised that Prometheus or Green Arrow showed up in this comic?
I was more surprised by Prometheus because he was one of the villains people were constantly pointing fingers at due to his OP powers. I was surprised they went in that direction.
I really like Prometheus. And at the time, I think I'm correct in saying this, Prometheus had only appeared in two different arcs in the Morrison Justice League run, the JLA run.
Yes.
That was a big deal that Prometheus, because he's very much Batman's evil opposite number in the Morrison run. Having Prometheus in a Batman book, having a Hush sequel, should be a bigger deal than this, you would think.
And it doesn't feel that way. It's just rando bad guy shows up and Green Arrow's taking him out.
Literally could be any villain. It doesn't feel there's anything specific to Prometheus in him showing up.
Yeah, it could have been Firefly.
It could have been Firebug.
Firebug. You didn't have to change the dialogue.
You have to give Lieberman a little bit of credit here because the way he has Prometheus and Green Arrow do just show up, it does somewhat recapture the random feeling of Hush of, oh, what new villain? Or, oh, is Superman going to show up this issue? That random guest star-driven feel that Hush 1 has.
That was the surprise element. Without that, I don't think these books would have sold. And also, these have really cool-looking covers, and I think that caught a lot of people's attention. I know it caught mine when I was that age.
We talked about the one on the first one, and I don't have any other great examples off the top of my head, but there's a lot of cover text on these Gotham Knights covers. We're on the Scott Beatty with the new dynamic duo of Bane and Batman,
right.
I actually am a fan of text on covers. You should have text on covers. If it's done well, it can be really fun and funny.
Yeah, but it's just the way magazines work, though. They're trying to get you to pick up the issue and read it. So when you're going to that extreme, though, to get people to pick it up, What does that tell you about the content?
Matt, the cynical consumer.
Sorry, AJ Lieberman. Sorry. I don't even know if I'm going to tag you in this because I don't.
I don't think we should tag him in this.
No, we're not going to do that. We won't do that on the Meditech thing.
But I am going to bash him now and say that this is a terrible example of writing Green Arrow. Green Arrow's motivation for the couple of issues, he's in the pushback arc, or he's angry that Prometheus killed a cop, and he's doing all this pro-cop speeches. And my man, Green Arrow's, at this point, he's probably not a socialist. He's probably just very progressive liberal, because socialism isn't mainstream in 2004. But nonetheless, Green Arrow shouldn't be a back. He shouldn't be motivated by taking revenge for it. It's a really terrible example of writing Green Arrow.
Ollie's written so much better when he has some personal trauma mixed with some humor and that dose of liberalism. I like my Ollie's written that way.
I like my Green Arrow to have villains who are the villains of woke liberals or socialists, which is to say crooked businessmen or evil. Well, all spies are evil, but CIA people, right?
Onomatopoeia?
No, not onomatopoeia. Onomatopoeia is the worst.
Okay.
Shut so up you don't... about onomatopoeia. Could onomatopoeia respond with a boo? I was going to say, I'm going to respond to you like onomatopoeia is with a boo. But then I was, oh, can onomatopoeia even do a boo, or is a boo not an onomatopoeia?
I don't think it is.
Okay, well, I guess I would respond to your suggestion that we bring back onomatopoeia with retching noises then, because I think he could do that, right? He could retch.
I think he could. I do, Bob. God, onomatopoeia. Man, what a stupid villain. All right. Well,
so
Bob,
but
we were talking about the Hush as a villain, though, for Green Arrow. I think that Bruce Wayne has so much baggage that Green Arrow needs a little more sometimes just to be interesting. So I would be okay with Hush if they would have done Tommy Elliott with Green Arrow.
I was a big Green Arrow guy back when we were kids. I was all about that Judd Winnick run on Green Arrow post 1 year later, a little after this. I really kept up with Green Arrow in the 2010s and the 2020s. I've read a little, but only a little. So I don't really even feel like I could say where the character's at now.
Yeah. Well, but the other thing too, even other mediums know this, because when they did the movie version of Hush, Riddler was the big bad. Tommy Elliott had nothing to do with it.
Well,
so they know he's got that much baggage. He's got plenty of baggage they can pull from if they ever need anything else. They don't have to have Tommy Elliott survive.
It's not that Tommy Elliott has baggage. It's that Tommy Elliott sucks. He's a crappy character. And that's why if you make Batman Hush, you make the Riddler the real villain.
He's a garbage baggage.
I did want to say that the scenario at the end of this opening arc pushback, it is Joker fighting both Prometheus and Hush. Prometheus and Hush are the new team fighting the Joker. And then going after the Riddler is seeking shelter from Ivy. All that sounds interesting if I just describe it, but for whatever reason on the page, it just doesn't come off as interesting at all.
It doesn't, because all the characters are in this very small area. Do you realize that? There's just the set is too small. And I'm blaming that on the artist. I'm blaming that on the artist.
That's interesting that we're actually getting to something that's specifically an artist fault here, because the tendency is to blame it so much on the writing. And I wouldn't say that I'm bowled over by Al Baranovo's art, but I didn't really blame it. But that is an interesting thing to blame it for.
The way he draws everybody, they just show up. Partially the writer's fault, but the way everything's drawn looks like they're all in the same place, and they just keep showing up and meeting each other over and over and over again for no reason.
We've covered Pushback. Very strange arc. Very strange arc. That's the opening six-parter. Then we're going to skip over the War Games tie-ins, which are 56, 57, and 58. We're going to skip over 59, which is a pretty forgettable Mr. Freeze fill-in. And we're going to go to 60, which is a weird one-shot called Games People Play. And that is not by Al Baranovo. It's by Javi Pena. I know Javi Pena's art from, he did a lot on the Kate Spencer Manhunter series, so it was nice to see him here. And Matt, do you want to summarize issue 60 for our dear listeners?
Starting off on what happens with this next set is that Alfred is kidnapped and he sees the real Tommy Elliott locked away by Hush. However, Alfred gets amnesia and he can't remember this long enough to tell Bruce.
It is insane how much amnesia plays into this run. Amnesia all over the place. My thought when I was rereading this, because I don't know if I had read this issue originally or not, but my thought when rereading it was, oh, is it just going to be Clayface impersonating Tommy Elliott? Are they going to do something stranger? And listener, They see that as we go ahead.
I want to go back to what Bob was talking about on the
cover. Great text on the cover here.
Yeah, on the cover, grudge match. It's the grudge match, Bob, between Hush and Batman. He's every issue selling a fight between these two.
I think that's a good. I think that's you. I think you want a text on the cover selling it.
This is big fight feel, and it's not the big fight. It's such false advertising. That's the problem. That's the issue.
Well,
I have with this old run. Even as a kid.
Second big arc, a five-parter called Human Nature that's in issues 61 through 65. Matt, there's no false advertising here because we think it's going to be a Hush Poison Ivy arc, and it is indeed a Hush Poison Ivy arc. Did you remember this arc at all or the next two standalone issues at all?
I did not like this arc. I remember it turning me off from Gotham Knights to where I stopped reading after this for 5 months. I just quit picking it up.
You stopped buying it, which is so I didn't read it. So
I owned some of this parts of this arc, and this is when I gave up. I tapped out during this arc.
My biggest problem in this issue, does it seem wrong to you that Poison Ivy knows Alfred's name and just calls him Alfred? That just seems weird.
Bob, I know many butlers on a first name basis. Does Rosie count from the Jetsons? Jarvis, does Alice from Brady Bunch?
I guess it depends on how much you're into the gendered division of labor, if mates. Okay. The framework here is Ivy has a lot of park orphans. Did she pick these park orphans up in no man's land?
They were children like that were living in an orphanage that escaped or something, and they all go to the Central Park or whatever that's called, Gotham Park, survive from an orphanage and cataclysm.
I guess that's her arc for most of No Man's Land. That becomes a motivation. Maybe Hush is tricking her, but it turns out that Ivy's venom or something is killing these poor orphans, at least allegedly. And she feels so bad about this, she wants to transform back into a human, and she goes to Bruce Wayne, not knowing he's Batman, but goes to Bruce Wayne to get help. I was complaining about a misunderstanding of Green Arrow earlier, but this just seems like such a misunderstanding of Poison Ivy as a character. The last character I can think of in comics who would want to undo his or her transformation would have to be Ivy.
She loves plants more than she loves humans. That's her whole thing. How do you miss that? Which is why they bring in Floronic Man, Bob.
Well, it's also strange, Matt, because like Floronic Man isn't called Floronic Man in the series. He's just called Jason Woodrue. Was his given name. It's just confusing. They present him as he died off page. He was in comics alive pretty recently before this issue. But in this issue, they're just, oh yeah, he died in a car accident. But then they just have him show up later in the arc. And he doesn't have any of his plant accoutrement. He doesn't have any of his Floronic Man thing. He's just Jason Woodrue's scientist. It's so strange.
This is totally how Batman and Robin should have been, Bob. It should not have been Poison Ivy. It should have been Floronic Man.
This does spiritually feel a lot like Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin
movie. You had Jason Woodrue in that film. He could have been the main bad over, and then Bane could have been played by Schwarzenegger, and we wouldn't have had Mr. Freeze.
Bane is basically Hush in this. Shut up. The other thing I wanted to say this arc feels like is it feels like a Silver Age Superman comic because it's Bruce Wayne and Hush are constantly fighting over Ivy. Hush doesn't want her to transform back to human. Bruce Wayne does. She transforms, and Hush wants to transform her back into Ivy. And so they're doing that. They do a whole thing where Hush tells Ivy that Bruce Wayne is Batman. So Batman has to get Alfred into the bat suit. And so Ivy can see Bruce Wayne and Batman Alfred at the same time and be tricked. A total Silver Age Superman and Lois Lane comic.
It's not what they needed during this time, especially with how good this book was in the beginning, the Gotham Knights. I don't know why they changed the formula. Why did they take the new direction, Bob?
You're saying you liked the comic series when Devin Grayson started it, and you're wondering why did they let A.J. Lieberman go in this different direction? I think the answer is Bane run, I think, was widely disliked and widely unpopular. Well, I don't think we were the only ones. There's a reason the Scott Beatty run and the Bane run have never been collected. And so the Scott Beatty run was still mostly in the format of the Devin Grayson run. Because of that, the editors were, oh, we just need to switch this book up entirely. A sequel to Hush sounds good. That's why they did the total 180. I think it's also the thing of Gotham Knights was launched as a Denny O'Neill book, but Denny O'Neill had been gone as editor for a few years. And I think Shrek is still the editor in this. And I think Shrek, he's not bought into the premise. It's just the third Batman book he has to staff. He doesn't care about the premise. I think that's the answer to your question.
There's this hot young author, Bob, who just got done with a fantastic run on Harley Quinn. We're going to shoot
Andrew
his
J.
name.
Lieberman is our man.
We're going to shoot his name to the top. He's going to be
Although, right up there with Jeff Lewis. I don't know if the Harley Quinn run came before or after Hush Returns, to be totally honest.
If it didn't, why would you hand over these action figures to him to play with? Look at what he got to play with.
Because no one else cared. Nobody likes Hush, Matt. Nobody likes Hush as a character. Nobody wants to write Hush.
You are not the general public.
No. I'm not talking about the general public. I'm talking about writers and artists don't care about Hush at this time. Now, they care about him now, 20 years later, which is why you have things like Josh Williamson having the female Hush, Shush. If you had any pride in your professionalism, why would you want to do a Hush comic? That's why nobody wanted to do a Hush sequel.
Yeah, I think AJ Lieberman has that mentality, but you shouldn't do it. If you have that mentality, and you go in and the editorial doesn't care. I'm not just talking about the Hush stuff, Bob. I'm talking about Killing Joke. I'm talking about copying from the other Batman stuff, the other mythos and everything that he usually isn't allowed to be touched upon, but was able to be like kind of explored in Gotham Knights.
I think you and I had expectations formed about high continuity about Batman, and you don't do a lot of Joker background or Killing Joke stuff from the Denny O'Neil 90s. And we're just not in that decade anymore, and people don't care. Shrek is the guy, as I understand it, who approved Hush and approved this, and he's a guy who just wants stunt comics. He wants comics that are going to be popular. I'm not comparing them in terms of quality, but it's the same guy who approved Broken City is the same guy who approved this, right? They're both pretty non-standard takes, and it's just, yeah, sure, take your shot. We'll see if people like it. It's the same guy who approved Under the Red Hood.
I get your point, Bob. They moved on past me. I like what I like, and they don't want to do it anymore.
To wrap up the Ivy arc, we should just say Hush does get Ivy to transform back into Ivy. It seems to kill her. We have Hush and Bruce Wayne scenes over Ivy's grave. It's very strange. And then apparently there's no follow-up to this. 1 year later, Poison Ivy is just back alive, just resurrected off page.
That's exactly what happened, and it blew my mind. Because in the first issue of the Batman, the 1 year later run you're talking about, there she is. And
welcome
you're like,
back.
Okay.
Welcome back. Next issue is issue number 66, Job Termination. And so did I understand this right, Matt? So in this issue, AJ Lieberman is tired of writing Prometheus, so he has Hush fire Prometheus because Prometheus doesn't like that Hush is romancing Ivy. But then Talia comes along and kidnaps both Hush and Prometheus, and something has happened to Prometheus, and Talia forces Hush to save Prometheus. And then this is all setting up a JSA classified story arc with our cliffhanger splash page on the last page being Old Lady, Golden Age, Red Tornado, and to be continued in JSA Classified. Is that what happened in this issue?
That's a great summary, Bob. Let's just keep moving.
We've got issue number 67. It's called Life of Riley, based off this old Irish saying that I don't fully understand, but it doesn't really matter for the story. And Rick Burchett does the art on this. Rick Burchett is the artist on the great Batman Huntress Cry for Blood. He also did some art for the Batman Adventures comic back in the 90s. And this is a very weird issue, too. It's about a pornographer who accidentally discovers that Bruce Wayne is Batman and tries to blackmail Bruce Wayne. And then it's told a little indirectly, which usually I like, but this case just frustrated me. So at the end, the issue implies that Alfred shows up to pay Riley, but instead just murders him. Is that right?
That's correct, Bob. But guess what? It wasn't really Alfred. Who was it, Bob?
It was Clayface.
Oh.
We'll find out in the next four-part arc called The Shape of Things to Come, which runs from issue 68 to 71. So it turns out that Clayface is impersonating, in a sense, both Tommy Elliot. And I guess he's not. It's less that he's impersonating Alfred, and is it more that he's infected Alfred? Is that how it's going?
There's a thing that's acting like Clayface that's transforming into Alfred, but then also Alfred is infected as well and turning into a Clayface.
Oh, wow.
There's two entities. Because if not, that means actual Alfred did do these things.
But just under the influence of Clayface.
Yeah, but that's a lot on a person. There's no way they would let that.
If it is Alfred becoming Clayface, can we call him Clay Alfred?
Call him whatever you want, Bob, because that doesn't stick.
We do have a hilarious cliffhanger. The second part of this, 69, There's a hilarious cliffhanger at the end, and it's a callback to Hush, where we actually see Alfred cut Batman's rope. Early opening part of Hush, instead of it being a mystery of who cut Batman's rope, it's we see Alfred cutting Batman's rope. I find that really amusing.
No, this is Alfred on a gargoyle cutting the rope. Like,
oh yeah, sorry, I forgot that key detail that he's on a gargoyle.
Alfred standing on top of it. He's on the gargoyle like Batman would be, chopping away.
To make a general comment, it's just hilarious that this entire run, it seems to hinge on multiple people finding out that Bruce Wayne is Batman. So Poison Ivy finds out, although later she's tricked into thinking it's not true. This pornographer finds out, Riley finds out, and then Clay Alfred kills him. And then presumably this Clayface entity knows too, because it's being directed by Hush to do all these things to frame Alfred and to mess up Bruce's life.
We never see this Clayface again. Even though it name drops all the other Clayfaces throughout the arc.
Batman has a computer screen up with Preston Payne and Matt Hagen and Basil Carlo and Lady Clayface. And then this is Clayface number 5. Very strange. The other thing I wanted to highlight from this arc. So because Clayface either is taking over Alfred or is impersonating Alfred or doing both simultaneously, and Alfred gets framed for this murder of the pornographer, we have Commissioner Michael Atkins, the replacement commissioner, who's really putting a lot of heat on both Alfred and Bruce Wayne and then later Batman. And the way that Bruce Wayne and Batman get Alfred off from the murder charges has Commissioner Atkins very angry at Bruce Wayne and maybe even suspicious about the connection between him and Batman. And it feels they were building to a story with that. I haven't read War Games, but apparently in War Games, there's also a lot of tension between Batman and Commissioner Atkins. But it's funny that rather like the Poison Ivy death, this doesn't go anywhere. Because almost immediately after this run, you have a reset 1 year later. And then 1 year later, Commissioner Atkins is fired. It's implied that he was corrupt. And then Bullock and Gordon are running the force.
That's exactly what happened. There were no repercussions for any of this, for the most part.
Have you ever heard people talk about the rise of Arsenal, the arc where Roy Harper gets back on drugs and kills a cat?
Yes.
People have said that crossover is so bad that they had to do the new 52. It was so bad that they had to reset. And it's like AJ Lieberman run is so bad that they had to do 1 year later. They didn't do a full restart, but they had to just, nope, we're jumping a year ahead and we're erasing everything that came before. Should we jump ahead to another weird fill-in issue, issue 72, The Letter?
Wanting to mess with the legacy of Thomas and Martha Wayne. That is the new hip thing to do. It was never a thing before, but after No Man's Land, they're like, hey, everybody, Thomas Wayne, not the guy we thought he was.
We see it in the Scott Beatty run where there's the tease that Thomas Wayne might be Bane's father. Then we see it in this where, oh, maybe Thomas Wayne was having an affair with this nurse. And then we also just recently saw it, spoilers for the Chip Zdarsky run, people, but we see it where there's a tease of, oh, maybe Batman has a half-brother because Thomas Wayne was having an affair with a different nurse at the hospital in the Chip Zdarsky run. And so we really just seem to have gone back to Thomas Wayne in infidelity is a big, big thing. And it's very weird that it happened twice in this relatively short-lived series. And then you make a great point too, Matt, about how it also calls back to something from the Devin Grayson run.
Don't forget, folks, that we started off with a letter of infidelity from our dear friend Jim Gordon.
Yeah, although I guess in that sense, Jim Gordon and Oracle's mom were together. She got pregnant by him, broke up with him, and married the brother, and then they just pretended Barbara was the brother's kid. That also has a weird echo in the Chip Zdarsky run, because the climax of the Chip Zdarsky run hinges on both Thomas Wayne and Jim Gordon having affairs. Spoilers, Jim Gordon actually had the affair. Thomas Wayne didn't actually have the affair.
Jim Gordon's having an affair with the mayor's wife. It's weird that when we think about Thomas Wayne, it's always infidelity. When we think of Martha Wayne, we put her in like a psych ward or Arkham.
What we're saying is that Thomas Wayne is a himbo and Martha Wayne is a crazy beep. That's the new revision of the mythos.
Why we got to do that? Come on, be more creative. These two final issues we're going to talk about here.
Payback parts 1 and 2, a very abbreviated end to this 24-25 issue run. 73 and 74, payback 1 and 2. And Matt, I cannot believe that this first issue hinges on a flashback of Joker training with pigeons as he hangs out on the Killing Joke lair.
Bob, I will never forget picking up this issue and reading these first couple of pages. and being so disappointed because it was Joker and pigeons. That's a penguin motif. This is Joker doesn't have anything to do with birds. So why do I have my Joker? Why is Joker training pigeons? This is so stupid.
You're exactly right that penguins should sue him for copyright infringement or trademark infringement or something. You're exactly right.
Yeah, even as an adult now, and I'm looking back, I'm trying to be positive about it and saying, okay, Joker's crazy. He's the pigeon lady in Home Alone 2. He's training pigeons.
Maybe. You're exactly right about the Home Alone connection. I was confused by the end of this, and obviously the end of this is famous for not actually ending. It was a real source of resentment for you and me at the time.
We need to spoil something for people, folks. Hush has a pacemaker put in by the Joker. Technically, Joker kidnaps a surgeon and has the surgeon put a pacemaker inside Hush. So basically doing Suicide Squad with Hush.
Oh, yeah, you're totally right. It's Suicide Squad. I didn't even think about that.
Bruce Wayne then agrees that he can help Hush, but lies to him.
Gotta play.
Bob, this is confirmed in Heart of Hush.
Oh, wow.
The Lieberman run is technically canon in Heart of
Hush. I look forward to seeing how Paul Dini tries to salvage Hush Returns in Heart of Hush.
He actually took the challenge. AJ Lieberman left us back as VN question mark.
Ordinarily, we have a really extensive discussion about how to rank these comics. I don't think we need to have an extensive discussion about this one.
No, it goes at the bottom, Bob. It's at the bottom now.
It's the worst thing we've discussed on the podcast, for sure.
Right. Right. Including our lost episodes.
I don't think we discuss anything bad in our lost episodes.
No, we don't, but I just want to make that clear.
Matt, you wanted to make some connections between this and Hush 2.
With Hush 2, I don't understand. Jim Lee and Jeff Loeb, they decided they want to resurrect this because they hit it so big back in the day, and it introduced a lot of newer readers to comics. That was their introduction to Batman. And it gave pieces of Batman's origin in small chunks that they could then go and research, find out more about. I think that was helpful for people who maybe didn't know a lot about Batman, whatever. You also had the movies that were dropping around that time. Or there was a lull then. You knew that the Batman Begins stuff was coming soon. So, all right, Bob. Moving all the way to 2025. This version of Hush that we're getting, based on the first issue, what are your thoughts?
I thought it really sucked. It starts off with this weird Joker doing the laughing fish thing, which felt like a short story that Jim Lee and Jeff Loeb had done for a charity book or something. Hey, remember the laughing fish? That was cool. It was cool when Englehart and Rogers did it, but I don't need to see Jim Lee failing to do Marshall Rogers' work. Then the rest of it was weird because it starts off with this nostalgia trip, and then the rest of the issue was just Hush beating the crap out of the Joker, torturing the Joker and what have you, and operating on the Joker in a surgical way. Jeff Loeb was, oh, everybody forgot that my character is the best and the coolest and the strongest, and I'm just going to have him wreck the Joker for the whole issue, and that'll remind you.
He's going to wreck him, but he won't go all the way and just kill him. He'll even for Batman to save.
Yeah.
And Batman Bob is in a different costume.
Oh.
It's got the yellow oval this time around.
Bringing back that 60s, 70s oval.
There were a couple of characters we didn't mention the last time around that we're going to mention this time. Did you catch any of that?
No. Who did they mention?
Who's the big dude who looks like he could be played by The Rock with the long hair?
Oh, I just assumed that was Ken, Joker's former henchman, but now what's Hush?
That's Joe Lieberman's original character, Ken. Have no fear. All right, I'm assuming it's the new Ubu.
Good point.
Yeah, we've got Batgirl. We didn't have a lot of Batgirl in the past. We also have her inside of the clock tower, Nightwing back there working out. Okay. Then we had Talia. Talia came back around this time with her helicopter, which I thought was awkward just to be floating there. Oh, they mentioned Damian. Bob, do you remember when they video recorded Jason Todd getting hit with the crowbar?
I do remember that.
Remember the guy with the camera? He was standing over him, pointing at him.
I didn't remember that, but I guess I do now that you mentioned it.
Never happened, Bob. You see Batman walking around? There's that one scene, Bob. There's one scene on page 22. I just got to point this out to you. Where you do see Jim Gordon from Killing Joke You see Barbara Gordon from Killing Joke. Those were both shown on screen because he took photographs. But on that final panel, you see Jason Todd getting hit by a crowbar. Joker didn't have a camera. He wasn't taking pictures of him beating up Jason Todd. There's no film of that.
Does this mean a three Joker scenario, man?
That's my question, Bob. That's what I need to know. Or did he dress up someone else as Jason Todd, and this is just some like stunt double type thing?
I never considered this, Matt, but if this Hush 2 touches on the three Jokers thing, it will truly be the worst comic ever made.
Bob, I have another theory already, though. This is how AJ Lieberman is helping us. That Jason Todd that we're seeing on the screen is just Clayface.
Oh, the return of Clayface.
Duh. Huh? That's all it is, Bob. Jeez. And the Joker that's supposedly dead, it's Clayface.
Oh, it's just all Clayface all the time. That's the real legacy of Hush. I don't think they ever did Clayface like that before, but the real legacy of Hush is just that you can do anything in a Batman comic and then you can say it's Clayface.
Bob, spoiler, end of Arkham City, Joker was Clayface.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Oh, sorry, Bob, spoiler. You ain't ever going to play it. You go to video game college and you haven't had any of them spoil Arkham City for you? Come on.
They have higher taste in video games than that, Matt.
Higher taste in video games? But what is higher taste in video games? No Arkham City for me, game of the year.
I don't know, Matt.
I play Madden 25.
I've never heard anybody at that school talk about a Batman game, and I've never heard them talk about a Madden.
Find out what they talk about, because I just want to know. I'm just curious. What are the college grad, or they thinking about?
If I start them talking about video games, they might never stop.
Oh, so no. Isn't that what they're going to school for, Bob?
Hey, in my class or in an English class?
All right. Bob, I did mention earlier that I did read that Batman Fortress comic this week. It's average at best, but worth a shot. But there's one other appearance of Hush that I want to touch on, and it's The Prelude to the Wedding. That features Nightwing versus Hush.
Why do you hate this comic so much? I don't get it.
Oh my gosh, Bob. Yeah, me and Bob went when I had it on text about this. It's so dumb. I don't mind the setup at first because it's cheesy with Batman going to a bachelor party with Superman and who was the other? Nightwing and Dick. Yeah, and Dick all going there. And, you know, Hush being jealous that he doesn't get to be a part of it. You think that's better than the Lieberman stuff?
Yes. It actually does pick up on a dynamic in the original Hush that I commented on when we discussed it, of Hush not liking Superman because he's Batman's other best friend. And Matt, you labor under the delusion that the first Hush is a good comic. You think that there's some thing as a good Hush comic, and I'm just here to tell you there isn't. He's a stupid character and you can't do anything. I don't grant that the Nightwing versus Hush comic is bad in terms of quality, but even if I were to grant that it is, like, every Hush story is bad in terms of quality. We have two incommiserable perspectives on this, I think.
There's one good Hush story, Bob, and that's it. And it should have just been left at that. Whereas you believe there's no good Hush story.
There's no good Hush
story. We definitely both can agree, though, there should never have been a sequel.
We'll continue agreeing on that as we keep getting beaten down month by month by Hush.
All right, Bob, very quickly, what is next week?
Next week, we are going to eventually get to Hush 3, which, you know, not to be confused, if Hush Returns is the original Hush 2, Heart of Hush is the original Hush 3, before you get to the new Hush 2. But to get to Heart of Hush, Hush 3, we're going to read the Paul Dini Detective Run first, which is four trades. The four trades are called Detective, Death in the City, Private Case Book, Heart of Hush. We're going to do the Detective Trade next. So it's Paul Dini, Batman Detective. I think it's about six issues. We're going to discuss that trade next week.
Look forward to it, Bob.
Looking forward to it, Matt. This has been Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.